For a while there, it looked like the candidate was going to have trouble getting to the diagnosis. He kept waiting for signs and symptoms of a specific disorder to appear, and when they didn't, he developed tunnel vision and focused on the possibility of an underlying psychiatric disorder. I'll talk about this problem of tunnel vision in a couple of minutes, but first, let's review the critical actions. There were three critical actions in this case. 1. Diagnoses metabolic alkalosis. 2. Administers potassium chloride. And 3. Admits patient. Other appropriate actions might include the following: an ECG, cardiac monitoring, and psych consult. This was an actual case of a diuretic-induced metabolic alkalosis with severe hypokalemia. The case is presented exactly as it transpired in an emergency department setting. I chose to use it as a sample case of an acid-base disorder for two reasons. First, other than metabolic acidosis, which is covered in the text, metabolic alkalosis is the next most likely acid-base disorder to appear at this exam. And second, this patient did not present typically, and sometimes the exam patients don't either. So I want to give you some guidelines to follow if a clinical presentation doesn't provide you with important clues. Let's begin with this patient's clinical presentation of weakness. Her vital signs were near normal, with only a slight increase in her temperature and respiratory rate. If you are presented with a vague chief complaint and normal or near normal vital signs, my advice is this: plan to be thorough. Thorough in your history taking, thorough in your physical exam, and thorough in ordering lab studies. This is where the candidate made a serious mistake. He did not take a good history, nor did he assess the patient's mental status. Although the history would have been unrevealing in this case, it might be very important if you encounter a similar case during your exam. The candidate gave up on taking a history from the patient only after two questions, and he did not pursue it with the patient's daughter. The chief complaint was not clearly defined, the past history was not taken, and there wasn't any attempt to elicit associated symptoms or a history of recent illness. Had this patient's weakness been due to an infection, cardiovascular disease, or neurologic disorder, this candidate would have been in real trouble. In obtaining a good history, follow the leads of the examiner. For example, in this case, the patient was not going to provide adequate information. That's the examiner's way of leading you to a significant other. The daughter provided the following information. 1. That the patient's symptoms were progressive over several weeks, but had accelerated during the last week. 2. That the patient was seeing a psychiatrist as well as her family doctor. And 3. That the patient was taking an unknown medication to help her lose weight. When the examiner said he didn't know what the medication was, he was leading the candidate to conduct a search for it. If the name of the medication had been unimportant in this case, the examiner would have simply given the name of the drug. The fact that it was unknown was significant. A search for the pills or pill container in the patient's home would have been appropriate, and it may have revealed the necessary information. However, the candidate chose to follow the lead that the pills were prescribed by the family doctor, so he asked that the family doctor be contacted. This revealed the name of the drug, hydrodiuril, which is a thiazide diuretic. Except for the uniformly depressed DTRs on physical exam, there were no other findings that provided a clue to the problem. In retrospect, one might say that, at the very least, severe hypokalemia should have been evidenced by a number of signs and symptoms, such as muscle cramps, nausea, vomiting, tachycardia, hypotension, and some degree of intestinal ileus. But they were not present in this case. And this had been a real patient, one that presented to an emergency department in a community hospital. Why is this important? Two reasons. First, many of the cases presented at the oral board exam are actual cases, and therefore do not have so-called typical clinical presentations. And second, it's important that you do not anticipate signs and symptoms to fit a preconceived picture you may have. Rather, concentrate on what signs and symptoms you do uncover and let this information lead you to appropriate lab studies. It is tempting for some candidates who are faced with a paucity of physical findings and a vague chief complaint to focus on what they do not know. A series of frantic efforts may then ensue, leading to disorganized and ineffective case management. There is an answer to this problem, and that is, always focus on what you know about a patient. When you focus on what you know, you begin to follow a path that will lead you to the correct diagnosis. That being the case, let's review what the candidate knew about the patient at this point. He knew that the patient was depressed over her failure to lose weight. He knew that she was taking some medication to help her lose weight. And he knew that her complaint of weakness was accompanied by depressed reflexes. These are all leads. Now let's follow them. Number 1. The patient's depression was verified and qualified by the patient's psychiatrist. It didn't give the candidate the answer to the immediate cause of her present problem, but it did provide an insight into the nature of her problem. Number 2. The medication itself was ascertained by following up with the family doctor. By taking this information and adding it to the fact that the patient's depression centered around her inability to lose weight, noncompliance with the medication became a distinct possibility. Remember that when we refer to the term compliance, we not only mean that a patient takes prescribed medication, but also that it's taken as directed. We've all seen patients who adhere to the philosophy that if one pill is good, two is better. And that brings us to the final lead, number 3. Generalized weakness plus diffusely depressed reflexes adds up to something systemically wrong. Now, why do I say systemically wrong? Maybe it's a focal problem. A good rule of thumb is this. If there are focal signs and symptoms, there is a focal problem. If there are non-specific signs and symptoms, there is a systemic problem, such as sepsis, poisoning, toxicity, metabolic or fluid and electrolyte abnormalities. Now let's continue with the analysis of this case. As the candidate was finishing the physical exam, the examiner led him to order lab studies. An extensive laboratory evaluation is justified only if a thorough H&P has been done and there is still too much missing information. The most common error in this respect is to substitute lab tests for a good history and physical exam. In this case, the candidate ordered the usual baseline labs primarily because his clinical assessment was unfocused. This is an acceptable practice if the diagnostic impression is unclear, but whenever possible, specific studies should be ordered based on clinical findings. Patients with an acid-base disorder frequently present with an altered mental status, vague complaints, or both. In this clinical setting, ABGs and lights should always be ordered. What about a stat tox screen and a carboxyhemoglobin level in a patient who presents with vague complaints? A stat tox screen is rarely, if ever, indicated in an awake patient with normal vital signs. However, a stat level of a specific toxin or drug is indicated if a specific ingestion is known or suspected on clinical grounds. And patients with carbon monoxide poisoning who present with weakness also have other associated symptoms, such as headache, dizziness, and nausea, which this patient did not have. Therefore, a stat tox screen and a carboxyhemoglobin level were not indicated in this patient. The candidate apparently included malingering in his differential diagnosis because he conducted a couple of bedside tests to check it out. The arm overhead test and evaluation of a patient's unassisted ambulatory behavior are frequently utilized in the emergency department setting. However, they are normally used when a patient says he can't move one or more extremities. Feigned paresis of the arms and/or legs is a common presentation of the malingering patient, It is suspected because of the sudden onset of paresis in an otherwise healthy adult, usually young, and also because there is no apparent reason or cause of the paresis. The patient who is feigning paralysis of an upper extremity will not allow the hand to fall on his head. Likewise, the patient who states he cannot walk should fall when placed on his feet. Interpretation of these bedside maneuvers is particularly difficult and often misleading if they are not conducted appropriately. They should be reserved for the suspicious patient who says he cannot walk or move part of his body. I don't believe they are appropriate for the patient who complains of weakness. I seriously doubt that you will be given a case at the oral board exam in which the diagnosis is malingering. To the best of my knowledge, every case has involved a patient with a legitimate medical problem, including those with a psychiatric presentation. And now back to the case at hand. The ECG findings were classic of severe hypokalemia. Flat T waves, prolonged QT intervals and U waves. Here again, it's not important that you be able to recite abnormal ECG findings of severe hypokalemia. It's simply important that you know these findings are leads or clues to the diagnosis, as well as the anticipated management. The candidate treated the electrolyte disorder with 1,000 cc's of 0.45 normal saline, with 60 milliequivalents potassium chloride to run at 100 cc's per hour. An examiner would probably accept this, but there's a better way to manage this problem. Acute severe hypokalemia is best treated by infusing 20 milliequivalents potassium chloride in 100 cc's 0.9% normal saline per hour by IV piggyback. The advantage of this method is that the rate of potassium infusion is under greater control, and it also provides replacement of all three electrolytes in an appropriate balance. Another advantage to this method is that the risk of local irritation is reduced. If you still think the patient needs more potassium, give him an oral dose supplement in addition to the IV infusion. And whenever you administer highly concentrated electrolyte solutions, always remember to put the patient on a cardiac monitor. It is not necessarily important that you know which diuretics cause which light imbalances for this exam. What is important, however, is that you connect the two pieces of information, decreased electrolyte levels with diuretic therapy, and then follow this up by initiating replacement therapy. Acid-base disorders with accompanying electrolyte imbalances tend to mystify us because there are a number of causes. If you look in any major medical textbook, you are likely to find a lengthy list of causes of the various acid-base and electrolyte abnormalities. Do not let this concern you. Remember, you don't approach a patient with this list in mind. Rather, you approach the problem from the other end by first discovering which acid-base disorder exists, as well as any associated electrolyte imbalance. If the cause of the problem is not readily apparent from the lab results, then the clue to the etiology is likely to be found in the history. And the answer you're looking for will be found by matching the lab abnormalities with that single piece of historical information which will bring the clinical picture in focus. This is particularly true in the oral board setting, where you are likely to be faced with a simple cause and effect clinical problem. You are not likely to be presented with a complicated case with multiple causes and multiple fluid and electrolyte abnormalities. Instead, you are most likely to encounter a simpler case, one that you've seen and treated probably several times in your clinical practice. In closing this case analysis, my final word of advice is this: follow the examiner's leads. He's taking you down a path, and if you'll just follow him, you will arrive at the destination quicker and easier than if you trailblaze a path of your own. This is the end of case number 6.